my Nicole. For those of you that don't know me, my husband and I planted this church almost 7 years ago now. And, right, seven? Six. 2012. Six. Six. Okay, my math is great. Yeah. Starting 7 years. They've already started. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, I am going to share with you this morning really just from my life. So I hope it's like you're sitting in my family room just listening to me telling you what God has done. And just imagine that I've baked something yummy or I've fed you a really good meal because that's what I like to do. So just imagine that that has happened and we're just sitting around enjoying our company. Really, just going along the apostolic theme, we're going to talk about apostolic trials. And the banner theme for our year this year was surrender. And we are going to really talk about surrender and what that has looked like in our life and how God has been working in and through us. So in Luke 14, 25 through 31, it says, we'll start at 26. If anyone comes to me, Jesus is talking as he's talking to the people. If anyone comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, even their own, such a person cannot be my disciple, and whoever does not carry the cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. So really, anyone who's been in this church and who is in discipleship, that's like the verse you're sent home with for homework after your very first discipleship lesson. At least it should have been. but we start immediately talking about what is it like to follow Jesus, and what is he going to ask us to surrender? What are we giving up? And what do we have to lay down to follow him? And it's not so that we have an awful life and have to live inside of his box, but it's so that we can actually have life and enjoy the life that he has for us, because his ways are far greater than our ways and his plans are far greater than our plans. And then in James, so this is just a foundation for where we're talking about. There won't be a ton of scripture laced throughout the rest of it. In James 1, 2 through 12, he says, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds." And those trials are like individual trials that are just for you. God allows them. He doesn't put them in your life because of sin. They're there, but he's allowed them. And they're unique for what he is working in you at that time. He's allowed that to happen so that we can actually grow. "Because you know the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work in you so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. If any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. But when you ask, you must believe and not doubt, because the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea, blown and tossed by the wind. That person should not expect to receive anything from the Lord. Such a person is double-minded and unstable in all they do." Wow. You need to ask with faith. "Believers in humble circumstances," those of you going through trials or surrender or whatever, "ought to take pride in their high position, but the rich should take pride in their humiliation, since they will pass away like a wildflower. For the sun rises with scorching heat and withers the plants. Its blossom falls and its beauty is destroyed. In the same way, the rich will fade away even while they go about their business." So just as we surrender to God, we give everything to him this year. We didn't imagine what it would look like for us and our family. We prepared our year a little different than most years. Our spring is always it's the busiest part of our year for us. So this year we added a few things. I was in my best friend's wedding and then my sister's wedding. So we thought we're gonna prepare in advance. We're not going to go to Illinois to spend Christmas with our family as we normally do. It's not relaxing. It's very demanding, and it's just not not a place of rest. So we went and borrowed our friend's house at the beach and stayed there over Christmas break and really just prepared ourselves for a spring that was going to be heavier than normal. And we were really excited for the words that God had spoken for the year and excited to get into the year. We were heading to Sweden just a few weeks in and just really excited for all that God had. Started the school year as normal, and then our fixture in our laundry room, I think hot, cold water, one of them, broke. So our landlord came over to fix it. And then I just asked him about a few things that in the 3.5 years we had lived there that had been broken, if there's any way he could fix some of those things. And he got very angry at me and started yelling and telling me how my kids are hanging on things and breaking them and that it was all of our fault. And my kid, we were doing school at the time, so Ella ran up and hid underneath the bed in the office where John was working, and the boys went up crying. And I was upset and crying, and I really couldn't control myself. I'm like, oh my goodness, I am crying in front of him. But my husband came down and looked him straight in the eye and said, you cannot talk to my wife like this. You'll have to get out if this is what you're going to do. And he said that he would not renew our lease and that we had to move out. So at this point, John had heard at the beginning of the year that we were going to buy a house. We had tried the year before and all doors shut. And I'm like, okay, until I hear it, I'll just trust that you heard it and God will do it in his timing. But I had to go spend the next hour and a half with Jesus after that. I said, kids, you can go do whatever you want. I really, really, really needed to hear who I was again and God's plan for my life, because I felt like I was an ant on the floor about to get squashed, or maybe I was getting squashed. Anyway, God spoke a lot, and he spoke very clearly that, yes, we were moving. I mean, he used the landlord to tell us that, yes, we were moving. And so on our busy spring, which we're normally housing a lot of different people coming through to speak at the training school, and there's the college spring break mission trip and all of the other things that happen in the spring, now was added a move. We knew we had to do it before we went to Sweden, and then we had most of May were taken away in big chunks because of weddings, so it had to be done kind of quickly, and life just started moving really fast. So, sorry, guys, the mic is not my favorite. Is this better, or was it fine like this? Okay. All right. I was just told that the headset doesn't work, so if you can't hear me, let me know. So we just had to start surrendering things, and surrender wasn't anything new. I'll just kind of share a little bit of my testimony, and surrender actually started right before I gave my life to Jesus. I went to college an extremely naive person. I grew up in a town of 1,400, and I know the things that happened, but not fully aware of the things that happened. And I went to college and kept getting invited to these parties with guys. Well, it took me until October to realize what guys wanted at parties with girls. It's incredible. Anyway, God's grace and his protection and his hand upon me was incredible during that time. But I just remember falling on my bed one night going, I don't want anything to do with guys, God. So I grew up Catholic, very religious, and I was a rule book, if you've heard me say that. John called me the rule book. I could follow every rule and did follow every rule. So anyway, I just fall on my bed, and it's not very normal in the Catholic Church that I grew up with to talk to God besides your prayers that are really to Mary and the saints. But anyway, I'm just telling him, I am done. I don't want anything to do with him. I did not want to get married until I was older, done with med school and residency and all of that. So there is my first surrender. About a week or two later, John came into my life, or I came into his. I don't really know how it works. I walked into my bedroom and he was standing there. So I don't really know how that really works, but I was in a dorm room, and my roommate was having a chemistry study session, so we like to say it was chemistry that we met. But shortly after we met, I could tell there was something different about him. So I started praying, God, I want to know you the way John knows you. Now, if you've heard his testimony, his life was, he would have been one of those guys I would have said running away from. But he had gotten saved the week before. So I meet him, and he is a totally different man. And the man that I meet, I'm like, wow, I want to be like this. So I start adding into my Catholic prayer times in the shower, God, I want to know you like John knows you. And of course, God wants to answer that prayer. And a few months later, I gave my life to Jesus. But I had my own plans. I was going to med school. I was biology pre-med, biochem minor. I had worked in the hospital. I had seen it all and done a lot. God had a lot of favor in my life with being able to do things, even though I wasn't yet a doctor. So we get to senior year and a few months before graduation, and we were getting married 2 weeks after, and God said, you're not going to med school. Okay. I'd already filled out my applications, taken my MCAT. My references were already sent in. So I just surrendered it and let him lead. He originally said, you're taking the year off, which was probably the wisest thing he could ever do. But after that year, I realized I wasn't. That was not his plan for me. We then had to surrender the American dream as our year into marriage. John lost his job and decided he was going to grad school, so we moved in the basement of my in-laws. So it's really not as bad as it sounds. It was 1,400 square feet. It had its own entrance and a full kitchen. So, it was really God's grace upon us that we could get through med school debt-free. I had to work to actually put him through med school, but that was totally God's grace. Then we both surrendered three of our kids at childbirth, as they were both, all three, whisked away by the NICU team. One was not breathing and had swallowed meconium. One, my sensitive skin boy, had so many rare spots and dots all over him that they whisked him away. And another one had the cord wrapped around her neck. So we just surrendered all of them right away. And then I surrendered having a plan for anything about, that would be 7 years ago now. Actually, I think 7 years ago last Saturday when John lost his job and God just started working with this church. I'm like, we can't plan anything. It is all in your hands and you have everything, and I am never going to make it through this season without trusting that you have the plan and I do not. So really just surrendering plans in general. Now, I am a planner. I like things organized and neat, and I like to know ahead of time what's going on. And, God is big enough that you can trust him without even knowing the plan, and it is for our good. There was a day that I was just crying out to him, just tell me a little bit. I promise I won't tell anyone. And he unrolled this map of my life before me, and he said, this is where you are, and this is where you're going, but I can't tell you where you're going because you're going to miss everywhere that I want to take you in between there because you'll be focused on the end point. So he knows the plan. There is no reason to hold on to it because he is far greater and more sovereign than we could ever be. Then I had to, knowing where we're going to live, that was another. We lived 8 months in boxes thinking we were going to move every day on plastic plates and I mean, it was crazy what we lived on, but we didn't know where we were going to live. Then he called us to move out of the house. We finally got here, but called us to move out of that house and told us to put our notice in and didn't reveal where we were going until 2 days before we had to be out. So, I mean, we just keep surrendering. And as I was going through these this morning, I started to cry because I'm like, God, you've taken us through a lot. We have, in the 14 years of marriage, we have been through a lot. And I feel like I'm not really even doing some of these times justice for it was, they were not very easy times to go through, but had we not done that, I have no idea where we would be. Guaranteed, we'd have a house with a picket fence and a boat, and I don't know what else, but we would certainly not be living a radical life for Jesus. And I'm so thankful for every one of these times that we did not buck up against God and just totally surrendered to him. Then came Judah, and I didn't have to surrender that child at birth, but I had to surrender a pain-free childbirth at birth. I had read this book, Supernatural Childbirth, and it is all about how God totally can cause you to have a supernatural childbirth because God didn't intend to have it that way. You guys, the book is good, full of biblical principles, but he did not want to do that in my life. At all. That was not what he was doing. And he may do it in yours. And I would say try it. But mine was not. So anyway, the one thing that, or a couple of things that we've learned is that God does what he says he's going to do. We can trust him. If we walk on our eyes with our eyes fixed on him, he is going to make it all happen. He is worthy of putting all of our trust and our faith in, because we can't take a mess and make something beautiful out of it. Only he can. And I would go back to any one of those trials that we went through. Anything that we have ever been through, I would never give any of them up. If we had, we would miss the next thing that God has for us. And being in the middle of those trials, as hard as they are at the time, and, you know, when you're in the middle of it, you can't see the end. You know God promises an end, but you don't know if it's days, weeks, months, or years. And when you're in the middle of it, just remember that Jesus has you there, and he knows where you're at. And there's the song, He's Never Gonna Let You Down. He won't let you down. Like, he's physically not going to let your heart down, but he's never going to stop holding you. In the kids' Bible that we read to them, he's never loving, never stopping, always unchanging, always loving, never, always and forever love, whatever. But it's always there, always. So, he has it all. And then we look back on those times with joy. We don't look at them and we're not like, wow, that was a time that we wish we couldn't remember anymore. But we look back on them and we're like, wow, that is the time that we grew. That is the time that God produced this faith in us. That is the time that God grew this in us. And it's like, they're like scars on us where we can just point to Jesus. We're fully healed, but we can point and say, this is what God did, and look at how he healed me. And this is what he did, and this is how he healed me. So, back to this year, we're getting ready to move and planning wedding bachelorette parties and showers and all of these other things that normally don't come along with moving and doing normal life. So they all of those things start happening. We have Dawn's out on trips. I think the last time I spoke was like 20 days before we moved, and John was gone for a week for something. And then we came back, he came back, and there was the college mission trip, and then we had about a week, and then we moved. And you guys are incredible and helped us move in, but there's still a lot to be done with all of that and with moving and getting things done without even adding in my brother and sister-in-law and their family being in the day we moved in for the next week and Easter weekend. And then I have a week with my sister for her bachelorette party, and then flying up to Illinois for the shower, and then my best friend's bachelorette party. So that, like, that's kind of the timeline we're working with. So we get to the last bachelorette party, and I was just going back and reading all of my journals yesterday, and just the sweetness of God and the morning of the last bachelorette party, what he had just spoken, and he really just planned out a really healthy routine for our family, just really spoke very clearly what it was. Little did I know that that routine wouldn't start the next morning after I got home, but it would not start until this August. That night was the first night of, I don't know what it was. No one really knows what it was. And I was in the emergency room, and it, adrenal crash, thyroid crisis, we're not really sure, and it doesn't matter, honestly. I think we may never know, because what God was doing was something different than labeling what I had to actually just bringing fullness and health to where we were in our season. And I would wake up in the middle of the night and be tingling from my mouth out and my shoulders down and like shaking, like convulsing almost, and just really couldn't control my bodily functions very well, and so extremely dizzy, and my joints were just felt like on fire, and just really strange, very, very strange things. So that happened, and walked through a lot of just trusting God, not knowing what it was, resting a lot more, and it gets to the night before my best friend's wedding, and it happens again. And this was hard, because I couldn't go to the wedding. And it's like a daughter. So imagine not being able to be at your daughter's wedding, and my son, and a son. Anyway, so I was going through like all of this stuff with not knowing what's going on with my body, and then I didn't want to go to the emergency room, but after 2 hours of it, I mean, we were worshiping and praying. We were fighting with all we could, and I'm like, I just kept fighting and saying, God said, I'm going to be fine, I'm going to be fine, I'm going to be fine. And John's like, I can't take it anymore. We are taking you. But again, who knows really what it was. They diagnosed me with hypothyroidism and sent me home. Clearly not hypothyroidism. But that just started, those attacks or whatever they were happened more and more. It's like my body couldn't handle stress. So at night when I was waking, everything would just have it, or while I was sleeping, it's like my body just, everything came out at night. I don't know. But God gave me these words on the day that we purchased the house. Nicole, I love you. I am the one initiating the sale and purchase of this home. I am in control over the whole process. I am a good father and know what you need. You need a new roof so that doesn't start to leak and your attic starts to dry out. Sorry. I'm protecting you and my investment. This home is to be a blessing and a safe place for you and your family. This is where your roots go deep and you start to thrive. Your home is planted right next to streams of water. This is time to thrive. Make this home yours and get out of debt quickly. I love you and I'm in this. The storm may come, but you will not pass away. So, The night before the wedding, I said, John, take me outside, take me outside. And he's like, I'm not taking you outside. Take me outside. But he didn't take me outside. Anyway, this came up. We closed on the house and walked in and immediately saw this little stream running. It's probably an overflow ditch of some sort. It's a stream. runs out through our backyard into this lake reserve thing that's back there. And I'm like, John, God told me about this morning. This is the streams of water he's bringing us by. So anyway, that became how I started to fight whatever this was that was happening at night. I would go down and I wouldn't go out. We have a screened-in patio area, and I would just pace up and down. And God gave me a ton of scriptures to stand on, and I would just hurl those scriptures at the enemy, and I would stand on those scriptures, and there were so many songs. You guys, I'm really, really bad with title. What are they? Not authors. Songwriters? Artists? I'm really bad with that. Song names? Whew. But if you guys think that's bad, my singing is even worse. So when I start to sing to you to try and figure out what it is, the song, because I want to find it online, no one can ever figure out what I'm doing. Because I don't, like, pick the main parts of the songs. It's whatever's in my head at the moment, and it's really bad. But I looked them up. So if you want to fight in the middle of the night, do it again. Couldn't tell you who sings it. Surrounded, History, and Your Faithfulness, those were, like, my songs. I played over and over again. I kept their little YouTube links up on my phone. But usually I just belted them out without anyone knowing, except the deer. Guys, they would just pop out in the middle of the night. I think they did like my singing. I think they did. One night John was down there while I was fighting, and he's like, there's an alligator. I guess he had just read somewhere that these alligators had been coming into swimming pools lately, so he's like, it's coming out of the woods, it's an alligator, but it was just the deer. Yeah, that's John. It's John. Psalm 91, Psalm 16, Psalm 94, 18 through 19, Psalm 23, those were the words, or the scriptures that I would stand on and just repeat, and sometimes it would take 3 hours before I would just be able to finally lay down and rest again. So these are some of the sweet things that God spoke. This one I had written on most every mirror in my house. You are going to be fine. Nicole, I love you. I said you are going to be fine. Do you trust me? And then I've created the sunset by trapping water in the air and light bending through it. Not only is it different day by day, but second by second it changes. I did that for my glory. Nicole, if I created you in my image, how much more do I love you and care about you than a sunset? You are valuable and important to me. You will be fine. And then he said, Nicole, I'm moving you to Citrus Cove for fruitful years. Your fruit must start in your family, and I'm setting up a way for that to happen. So those were some of the things. There's so many more, but just bringing you into the ways that I fought and got through it. He spoke one day. I was asking, well, missed my sister's wedding, wasn't able to go to that either, and really didn't know if I'd be able to go to Sweden at all. And one Saturday, John had taken the kids out, and I heard, Nicole, you're going to Sweden. And I was so excited. The one thing I didn't do was ask any further questions, and I wish I would have. He showed me later how that would have been valuable, but I just assumed it would look like going on any other mission trip, and really, I should have asked more questions and not just taken that as that, so that I would have known how to run slower on the trip and not move at the same pace as everyone else did, and it ended up taking a lot out of my body, and by the time we got to the end of the trip, the night before everyone left, I started getting some hives. And I, since high school, I've had thermal hives. They're kind of strange when the temperature changes, either cold to hot, hot to cold. I get these random hives. And since I've been pregnant or nursing for about 9 years of my life, they didn't go away, or I didn't have them because of, I don't know, I guess your immune system's very low at the time, so my body didn't need to fight the temperature. Strange things. So anyway, I thought, well, they're back. That's what it is. And it was extremely, those of you who are there, remember how hot it was the night before we left, as we're all in that room worshiping and praying and telling the stories of how God moved. Well, the next morning I woke up and they are full body on the bottom of my feet, in my ears, all over my scalp. I mean, anywhere you can think of, I had them everywhere. And they weren't like little dots anymore. They were like taking over my body. Like they've all merged into giant. I was basically red. going through the airport, I'm like, someone is going to take me away from my kids. I was kind of, I looked scary. I did look very scary. I was looking back at pictures of us on the airplane. It was really scary. Very scary. Anyway, I spent the first 5 days in Portugal like this. I laid in bed like that. Because if I moved, I itched like crazy. It was really, really, really bad and itchy. And we had a doctor that we were working with here, and she's like, well, it's either adrenals or your liver, so increase your adrenal medicine and start drinking lemon water all the time to detox your liver. So the next morning I take something, like, nothing's happened. And she's like, well, you must have ingested something. Take one HCL every hour for 2.5 days. And at the end of 2.5 days, it was so much better. She didn't tell me what I might have ingested. We get home, and I have parasites. So, probably got them in Ecuador, Colombia, Mexico, and just the stress of the spring brought them up to the surface. And you'll be happy to know that our whole family does. So you might too. Anyone who's been on that trip, any stress that you go through might actually bring them up and out. If you get hives, maybe. Just maybe. Anyway, God spoke... Sorry. It's okay. They're better out and gone than in. I promise. Anyway, God spoke so much during that time. He just brought to memory that at the very beginning of all of this, our board, we have an oversight board that is from other Antiochs that oversee our church, and they said, you guys have run so hard for 6 years. It is time to rest. You have not had to rest. We started our church a little different than more church plants, as it was just our family. And it was just different. There was a lot that we were doing and caring, and roles that we had never played before. I mean, we had never planted a church before. We were both biology majors. That does not equal writing your bylaws or filing for your 501c3. We didn't know how any of those things worked. So we're doing things, running out of different brains that we've never even had before and trying to do all of those things. So God was just saying, rest, rest. He was reminding me again this morning of something that he said, and that while we were doing this, I was really having to run on an opposite of what I normally am. I ride the introvert-extrovert line and the Myers-Briggs more on the introvert line. And for those 5.5 years, I was extroverted to the max. Anyone coming to my house knew it was like Grand Central Station. If we didn't have people living with us, there was always at least one other person in the home with us. And it was just continual. And not that it is a bad thing, but I hadn't gotten away and rested or had a quiet moment in years. So he was just really speaking, you just need time for it to be quiet. You need time where there's no one else around and you can think on your own. And he was speaking to both of us that things that we enjoyed, we've had to put away and aside because we were trying to get a church plant off the ground. And not that we thrive in doing things that are fun for us, but it's okay to do those things every now and then. And we hadn't taken time to do that. So really, really just seeing what God was doing. And we may never know what it was that I had, but he was allowing the ground to shake so that we could stop. He spoke that the 5 years are done. Your foundations are set. There is a church now that can rise up and take things. So we, along with surrendering health and everything else, just surrendered every bit. People are God's plan. You guys are his plan. There's nothing that we can do to draw you closer to God. He's going to work that in you, and if your hearts are open, he's going to do it. And we trust his plans. We trust the disciples over you that they hear Jesus on your behalf, and we trust the team that was leading the church and really just allowed everyone to step in and work and continue to move this church forward. We definitely didn't go backwards. We didn't get smaller. We made it through Sweden, and 101 people went, and 101 people came home. That's a victory. Not all at the same time, but everyone went and came home. And then God was also showing me my mode of operation and where it's cracked and broken. And that through this spring, a word that he had given me for the year was John 15, just abiding in him. So as the spring is going, I'm still spending time with him, and I'm hearing him, and he's telling me to abide throughout the day, which is good until about 10 in the morning. And then it's like this control kicked in me, and I had to make sure that my boxes got checked off for what had to be done that day. And it's like I went into go mode. Every day I would start out hearing his voice, and then it's like finish that race, but by myself. So, and every day I'd come back, abide, abide, abide. Okay, it'd be great. And then we'd do a little bit of something, and I'd forget to ask what the next step was, and I would just go and look at the to-do list, and if it's washing the floors or packing the kids' bedroom or whatever it was, I just kept going. And he was bringing me back to, multiple times during this season, he's brought me back to what he has called Joyuary. And one January, we really just practiced abiding, he and I had to play Father May I for everything. Anything I wanted to do, Father May I, Father May I. But it was good, and that I was just constantly so joyful, and God started calling it Joyuary. Some of you know that people, when January comes around, they call it Johnuary. They call John Johnuary in January. But God has given me a Joyuary. And anyway, he's just showing me how abiding with him, even through the craziness, allows so much more joy, and not doing it out of myself and not doing it with performance or whatever it is. So he also was speaking, everything that you're doing is good for the kingdom, but is it profitable? So I've really been going back and looking at the things that I do, and is it going to be profitable for the kingdom? I wasn't off in sin or doing anything else, but if I'm not actually living and walking in what he's speaking at that exact moment, then I'm not profiting the kingdom at all. So I have July 15th on here. I don't remember. Again, in Portugal, I was asking, I was praising God that my neuropathy went away. My arms kind of had neuropathy. Strange things happened to me, guys. So many strange things, but like for days, pain and couldn't move them. And so I was praising him that it went away. And I was like, God, are these strange things ever going to go away? Am I ever going to be normal again? And he said, when I have had a work in you that is lasting, die to self, choose me, and walk in obedience. And at that minute, I realized, oh, strange things are going to happen for the rest of my life. I only attain that when I get to heaven, this side of heaven. Those strange things, those trials, whatever it is, are going to come, and they're going to keep coming, because the work he is doing in us isn't complete until we hit home. So I'm like, okay, God, I get it. And then all of the different lessons we've been learning in school. One of the incredible things about homeschooling is that it can be completely biblical based. So that as you're learning about history from a biblical worldview and what God was doing on this scene during those times. And what was incredible that was coming to my mind was that no battle dedicated to the Lord was won without submitting and surrendering to God's plan and allowing him to be the one to lead the victory. And God has to be the one that leads whatever it was I was going to, whether I was going to experience it for the rest of my life or whether it was just going to be a day thing or a year thing, whether I wouldn't even get out of the bed in Portugal or not, he was going to be the one that was going to lead the victory. And it wasn't going to be me. It wasn't going to be anything I did or took. It was going to be him. We did get to get out the last few days and enjoy our trip. It was hard because we had planned this two-week rest. And at first, I'm like, God, this rest it's ruined. We're not actually having that time. You know, we think rest as sightseeing through Portugal. And we had gone through the books with the kids and looked at the different websites of what to do with families while you're there. We had all gotten our sunglasses. And he really showed us that rest isn't what we even think it's going to be. And those first 5 days, we just needed to sit and do nothing. I know John has mentioned that we were overlooking a vineyard and some sort of orchard, plums or something. But anyway, God just continually speaking the abiding, and we all were able to really fully rest and move from that place of rest. And we didn't pack our days and come home fully exhausted from that trip. And we look back and it was our favorite trip that we have been on as a family. And God moved and did so much and definitely had lasting fruit during that time. So that is a little bit of how we got through this summer with surrender. We came back, went to families for the next week and a half and visited everyone that we were supposed to see for the wedding, went to our U.S. conference, and Eli and I couldn't attend because we were sick in bed, but came back. And God just, he had spoken before we left that the trip was 40 days long, and just like he has spoken so many times in the Bible with the number 40, that something was going to be different. So we got back, and I didn't feel any different when I got back, but we had nothing for the next week planned, and it was the most restful time I've ever had in my home in my entire life. And then we found the parasites, and I felt normal for the first time since April. But I really don't know if it was parasite. I don't know what it was. I just know that God was getting me out of my comfort zone so that I could see him and walk with him into all that he has. And you've heard John's side of the surrender story where he's actually having to do laundry and teach the kids and do all of those things that he does not normally do. There's Any day I feel, say, oh, I have a headache or something, he's like, you're not going backwards. I can't do that again. I can't do that again. That is the hardest thing to do. So, I mean, I've always said, John, what would ever happen if something happened to me? Like, even if I went away on a trip for a few days and you had to take care of anyone, what would happen? And he got to experience it. But we need to say thank you. I know John has said it a little, but without this church, we would have never made it. We are so thankful for you guys. We are so thankful for the foundation that we laid, that we are a family. And just as family would, we don't have any family that live in Florida with us, but just as family would, you guys came to our rescue, our life group. At first, they heard of it, and they're like, oh, well, we'll start making meals, and we'll come clean your house. And then it got bigger and seemed like it would never end. And we had meals coming in every day, and people would come and pick up our kids and take them out. And even before that, just the overwhelming response to help us move. You guys have absolutely no idea how instrumental that was, because if we had to do that ourselves, what you did, you put our whole house together in a day. I still have not put my cabinets where I would like them or anything else. But had we not done that, we would still be in boxes today because of what happened afterwards. So God used you guys in an extremely mighty way, and we are so thankful for all of that. Taking care of the kids, cleaning. We are so thankful for all of you guys and the way you loved and supported us through it all. So this morning I was untying Ella's necklace, which had gotten in knots, and God started speaking to me more about surrender, and he said, we really don't intend to tie ourselves in knots at all, but that that the things we choose to do, the lies that we partner with, the things that we believe, the past experiences that we allow to come in and for us to move out of those places, it gets us into a place of knots where we ultimately become not usable anymore. But that as we walk together in community, we can't do it on our own. We need that discipleship. We need to be vulnerable. We need to continually speak to people, let people speak into us, that he gently untangles us. And that's really not an easy process, guys. And it's hard. But if you don't push the eject button, we become beautiful and usable again. And we get to be worn around his neck. And we get to be his. And they were singing a song, of course, you know, mean songs. It said something about shame and being in his presence. That song. Well, anyway, while we're singing it, I got this picture of us just worshiping in his presence. And as we're untangled, as we're in his presence, he shines on us and we actually shine out. And there is this ferocious dragon in front of us. And because we allow him to work in and through us, because we let worship be our weapon, that dragon is defeated. So we just need to continually allow him to work on our knots, take out our kinks. Some knots you can still be worn. Some knots are like you are out temporarily. But take those to God. As we go into ministry time, allow him to show you those areas that you need to surrender to, those areas that holding on to isn't helping you, and you're not actually bringing anyone else into the kingdom because of it. So Jesus, we thank you that you love us, that you have called us to great surrender this year, that whatever it is, if we are just surrendering that lie of failure or that sin pattern or just our eyes being focused on ourselves and not on you, Jesus, that you would show us that this would be a great week of victory in you, that we would abide greatly, that you would speak to us, we would listen and move from that place. God, we thank you for your love. We thank you that the victory is yours and that you're the one to lead us into victory. In Jesus' name, amen.